It is Saturday, January 26, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today, some geek news and geeks in your home or geek consulting right to your home. That's right. You can get a geek in your home. You just got to pay a little bit of money. We'll be talking all about that today on GeekSpeak.
The bandwidth for GeekSpeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIHosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Tune in this evening at 5 p.m. on the Planet Cruise Comedy Hour with Richard Stockton. An hour of comedy, songs, and stories by Santa Cruzians and about Santa Cruzians. That's the Planet Cruise Comedy Hour with Richard Stockton today at 5 p.m. on Central Coast Public Radio. Today's show at Geek Speak, we'll be talking with Jesse Wilkins. He is a consultant, a geek consultant, can do networking, home help, anything you like. And in the second half, we're taking your questions and comments to talk to him. And you can take the numbers down now if you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877, or go to geekspeak.org right now and send us email. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Geek Sean Cleveland, Senior Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Lyle.
And we also have Jesse Wilkins. Jesse Wilkins is a professional geek servicing the Central Coast of California. If you need a geek to help you out, he's your man. The geeks cover, we're going to cover some news before we get into discussion with Jesse. But Jesse, if you'd like to join us and in the news, please feel free to do so.
Sounds good.
Thanks for being here. So, Sean, for you, sir, what do you got? What's in the world of geek news this week?
Geek news. Well, this is kind of interesting. VIA has announced a new processor. They haven't had a processor in many years, and their processors are really low-end. I guess HP's used them in really low-power notebooks in China. They've also been used by OQO in handheld, you know, computers. And there is also a small amount of people who like to buy VIA motherboards and chips because they play a pretty good DVD, you know, player and give you computer capabilities, really small form factor, doesn't require a lot of power, leave it on all the time, that sort of thing. So this new chip is called Isaiah, codename Isaiah. I don't think they've given it an official name yet. VIA purchased Cyrix and Centaur, both processor companies, maybe like anywhere in the last 5 to 10 years.
Wow.
Glenn Henry, their lead engineer, has led about 100 people to build this chip. It's taken them 4 years. 100 yeah. people.
I'm actually surprised that anybody's doing it. I mean, yeah. especially the way AMD's being treated lately. You'd think that...
I think this surprised a lot of people.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is some sites out there are saying they were able to play, like Crysis on the CPU. So it's a 2 gigahertz chip. Nice. I think it's only a single core now, but there's dual core versions. Yeah, okay, so it plays the game, probably at the lowest resolution, something you wouldn't want to do.
Hey, I'm just impressed it runs Windows.
But the fact that it's extremely low power chip that can do this sort of thing is interesting. I think the biggest interesting feature about the chip is it has out of order execution, and VIA has never done out of order execution before. They've always done, they've only processed instructions in order because you get a big power hit when you do instructions out of order because you're doing a lot of branch prediction, and if you predict too much, you crunch code that doesn't get used,
right?
Thus wasting power.
Sure.
So it's competing a little bit with AMD and Intel. I don't know. We'll see what kind of spaces they get into, but it's an interesting approach to low power computing. So that's VIA Isaiah processor.
Very cool. Now, I mean, a lot of companies have done this and actually gone out of business. Like, you used to work for a company called Transmeta, which also produced a processor for low power usage.
Very extremely low power usage, yeah.
And it's not that, I mean, it's possible to do, but isn't the infrastructure of the chip kind of an Intel-owned thing? And so anybody that wants to compete with
them... No, actually, VIA has licenses. They have patents of their own, and they've actually taken Intel to court, and I think they've successfully been able to build x86-based chips based on patents agreements they've made in the past.
Right. So that's how those big corporations deal. They trade with patents.
And Transmeta, they built a VLSI architecture-based CPU that had this code morphing engine that literally translated x86 code, VLSI code, to x86. So they kind of circumvented the x86 license in a very different way. The fact that their chip wasn't x86 based at all.
Right.
Which is why it could have been a lot more powerful if it didn't have to do that real world translation.
Yeah.
You know, but for what it was, you know, it's like 800 megahertz chip for a 1 to 2 watt.
Right. It's pretty impressive.
That was pretty impressive.
But these
then.
Aren't really going for this new company. VIA is not really coming for low wattage.
VIA has always been low wattage.
Oh, yeah. So.
Yeah. That's who they're targeting. Oh, this is a 64-bit chip, too, by the way. It supports AMD 64 technology.
Well, that's cool.
So we'll see. What's kind of neat is we might see new low-power devices now that have quite a bit of performance and can use the same applications you use on your desktop.
Cool. All right. Now, Sean, do you... well, look, we're going to keep doing news, and you're the geek with the news, so I'm going to go right back to you, sir.
All right.
I mean, I do have a little thing that it's basically that the space tourism is going to be big in 2008.
Yeah, I was just going to cover that.
Oh, okay. Well, go
Virgin.
Ahead. Yeah, Virgin.
We didn't even talk about what news we had. So Virgin Galactic, which is the space flight division of Richard Branson's Virgin Group.
Right.
They already have Virgin Airlines.
And music. And
they unveiled their first spaceship in New York. It's called Spaceship 2, because they already had Spaceship 1, which I hear there's a replica hanging from Google's lobby. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, kind of funny. So, or no, maybe it was eBay. Well, it's one of those places. They're all the same,
one of
the
big companies. Sure.
Actually,
I can see the emails pouring in.
Like, you're so wrong.
eBay's not the same as Google.
It's a scaled replica. So... So this thing is, you know, they had a pretty good run with Spaceship One. Spaceship Two actually had a setback. Scaled Composites, who is building the ship, one of the engines exploded in last July and killed three engineers. So that was kind of a big setback for them. But the fact that they were able to unveil this now and talk about, you know, possibly taking this, it's a suborbital craft. It's not a spacecraft. It only goes 65 miles up into, or 68 miles into the atmosphere. So about six minutes, there is weightlessness. So if you want to take one of these flights, I guess it's about about $200,000 for a ticket price.
Is the primary reason to do this is to experience weightlessness or to get across the world fast?
I think to get
fast.
As close as you can to space.
Okay.
You know, without spending millions of dollars. So for $200,000, you can get a seat.
Yeah, I think I'll sell my house.
They want to bring these prices down to $20,000. I guess one guy, a businessman named Alan Watts, was able to redeem 2 million frequent flyer miles Virgin.
No way.
To get a seat on this thing in 2009.
That's the best use of freaking flyer miles I've ever heard of.
So I guess $100,000 for the next 400 passengers. I guess the total time for each flight is about 2.5 hours. I guess the 6 minutes of weightlessness is probably going to be the
more fun part. Six minutes, that's a long time.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I mean, yeah, you can brush your teeth in 6 minutes.
I mean,
that's a long
time. And I mean, if it's 68 miles up, you might as well be in space. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You are seeing the
view.
Earth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I bet there's windows in this thing, right?
I hope so. Could you imagine?
Okay, now we're in space.
You get these little, you know, 4-inch by 3-inch LCD panels on the seat in front of you. Tracking your flight.
Just totally tricked them. It's like a totally normal
ripped.
Plane.
I want my money back. And all I got was a bag of peanuts.
$200,000. It's a nice bag of peanuts. All right, space travel's happening 2008. That's kind of for the expensive people. And I'm assuming that these things aren't very fuel efficient.
Actually, it's launched by a huge rubber band. Actually, man. It looked, when I first saw it, it looked like one of those little white styrofoam little...
yeah, like the planes you see at the mall that go loop to loop.
That you actually fire off rubber band, you know?
Yes, it looks like that.
It kind of looks like that.
All right, thank you for that, Sean.
Yeah.
All right, Jesse, you're sitting here not even laughing.
I'm laughing, just not out loud.
Okay, that's great. Laughing at us, not with us. Thank you so much. So, Jesse, let's talk a little bit about how long you've been doing customer service kind of support for people.
Well, I've been running my own computer.
You know what? Can you get that mic closer to your face?
I can. How's that sound?
That's much better.
I've been running my own computer consulting business for the last 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. And before that, worked for the school system and other local computer stores. And so it's been fun and been learning a lot and helping a lot of people the last few years. We all enjoy it. Basically, every client of mine is a family member.
Oh, really?
So it's a good bond.
A good relationship.
They all come back, and I love them.
Can you take any more work on?
I can, always. You know, okay. Always busy, but always looking for more.
We are always getting calls.
Oh, my gosh.
Asking for a geek or somebody to come teach them how to use an operating system or fix their computer or do an upgrade.
Certainly. You know, tutoring is one of my favorite because we just get to sit there and sort of almost bond over the computer.
Yeah.
You know, they have questions, but they don't know how to get it done. I have answers or, you know, I show them how to pull out their own answers from the computer itself. And, you know, in the end, it's enjoyable by everybody. And, you know, they always come back for more.
Very cool.
Which is great.
Do, when you go to somebody's house to work with them, how do you engage in their, you just go right to their office, right? They don't have to come to you.
Yeah, usually,
But when you're, like, give me a scenario that you just recently went through with a client.
Let's see. I've got a lot of tutoring on the Mac. So people will call me up and say, I just got a new Mac. Teach me how to use iPhoto. And so they'll have their digital camera. They'll have their computer open. They may or may not know too much about using the computer in general. But I'll say, here's the steps to do what you want to do. So there's sort of an interview process. You know, what do you want to get done? What's your ultimate goal?
Oh, sure.
How many pictures do you want to deal with? Because some programs are better at dealing with thousands of pictures versus hundreds of pictures. And so we'll sort of sit down and figure out what they want to do. And I'll give them a couple of possibilities. And, you know, if it costs money, I'll give them the price ranges of how much this software costs, how much that software costs. And we'll sort of just trudge on from there.
So you can handle networking, training, which you prefer to some degree. Does that mean if somebody's, you know, got dial-up for a long time, they're not going to be doing a DSL modem thing? You can help them hook
it up? I just set someone up with DSL. We've been talking about it for, like, the last year. And finally got her off dial up into DSL. It's been awesome, but, you know, anything they want.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, we're going to be taking calls in a little bit to kind of invite people to ask you questions
Certainly.
About your business, but also in general to ask you questions about tech support. So the phone number is to do that, 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Do you charge for the... do you have like a base charge for the first hour kind of thing?
I do.
Want to talk about the actual prices.
Yeah,
but that's kind of
you know, usually I have a generic charge for businesses, a generic charge for home people, and it's a little bit less the second hour. And I've also do work at my office, so I charge less for that as well, so I can take stuff home overnight and work on it, so they don't have to sit with me, and it saves me time, saves them money, basically.
When somebody's, you know, you come in, you're helping them out, you clearly it's actually a hardware issue. Do you? Will you go ahead and do a purchase for them and then bill them for that thing? And then where do you do your purchasing?
Usually I do. Most people don't want to deal with it. If they want to buy stuff, I'll sort of point them in the right direction. I do a lot of shopping online, or I keep my eyes out for good deals around town and try to pass that savings on to my clients. So just a lot of shopping online. Newegg is a favorite of mine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, that's, of course, only when you've enough time to purchase for them, right?
Yep.
Or do you stock some stuff?
I do stock RAM, hard drives, routers.
Things that die all the time.
Yeah. It's the stuff that's the most common, you know. Obviously, setting up a home network with wireless, that's very common.
Now, this is Mac and PC.
Mac and PC, and which is great.
So you're stocking mostly PC stuff.
You know, yeah, sure. Yeah, Macs are a little different. Their hardware is definitely more unique in the sense that if something breaks on, like, a Mac laptop, you've got to go directly to Apple for the most part. And for PCs, you can go other places, but...
Do you draw the line? Like, you will not work on hardware before this date, or you will not work on this operating system, you know?
You know, I've seen my share. I've worked with Windows 95 in the not-too-distant past. I've worked on older Mac classics not too long ago either.
Yeah. Like any serial device?
If they're willing to spend their time and energy and they really want to work, I will.
Yeah,
but
okay.
There's also a cutoff. Do you want to spend money having me fix something that's really old when they can spend the same amount of money getting a new device?
Yeah.
So we also have that discussion.
Sure. All right, well, let's do another news story. Sean, if you don't mind, sir, I know you've got a collection.
Yeah. Let's see. Scientists, I don't know where. Wait. Yeah, it's really long. Keck School of Medicine.
Okay, you know what? Give yourself
Walter Long. Yeah,
give yourself a minute there on that, and I'm going to talk to Jesse.
No, this is kind of interesting. Okay. So scientists have been using baker's yeast to study aging because it has a lifespan of about a week.
Oh.
And they can remove genetic markers, and they can do other crazy things to it to make it last longer. Well, they've recently been able to increase the lifespan of baker's yeast tenfold.
I like that idea. Mm-hmm. What they do is it translate to?
So they actually removed mammals? A pair of genes, RAS2 and SCH9, which promote aging in the yeast and actually cancer in humans. And they got this tenfold lifespan increase. And then, of course, people started asking them, well, what does this mean for humans? Does this mean we can live 10 times longer, if we start doing this sort of thing? And interesting information came out of this. This is what really the news story is about. There's actually going to be side effects if people really want to live a long time. And scientists think that possible side effects include mutations, like severe growth deficits and other health problems. Because you've got to actually... You you're actually pulling genes out and doing various things. Not a good thing. So they're thinking maybe they'll be using these sorts of methods to help people with, let's say, Werner Bloom syndromes, where they have premature aging.
Right.
Or people with increased cancer risk. They can possibly do some things to help those people out in the future. But if you want to live 10 times longer, just be aware that
it may not
be the best quality of life.
Yeah. Well, that's what I've heard, is that a lot of these genes that do terminate cells, which, effectively that's what aging is the slow degradation of cells and such. If you take some of those out, you just get a lot more cancer. So there's this whole side effect of where do you draw the line? Do you want to be a very sick individual? Here's a kind of interesting story that I saw. There's an attack you can do on a website called a DOS, a denial of service attack. And what you basically do is you have a whole bunch of computers at the same time hit a website. And so a group of hackers hit the Scientology website and took it down. And I'm assuming because Scientology has
been
getting...
That's not funny.
I'm assuming that Scientology's got a lot of coverage in the news with Tom Cruise's kind of rant that hit last week. And that caused a group of people decided to take them offline. So they went offline for a little while. They're back up again. And it's interesting, but of course not exactly geeky, because it's kind of a lame use of technology to take off a site. Any site is vulnerable to denial of service. In fact, it's a way that crime is being done now. You'll take a store that sells a lot of product, and hackers will take it down for a few hours.
I read about this guy who gets hired. Actually, I don't even think
we had him on show.
No, did we?
Well, we covered it. Yeah,
the guy that
stops denial of services.
Yeah, he can actually stop it. But it takes a lot of computers,
and a lot of networking control.
But when people get, blackmailed by these denial of service people, because that's what happened. Is they usually go to these gambling companies, people who make money, maybe off. Not in the United States, and they threaten them with denial of service, and it's going to cost them, millions, hundreds of millions of dollars if you get hit. So why don't you just pay us, a couple million dollars, and we'll leave you alone.
So this guy goes
to the companies and says, tell them no, you're not going to do that. And then he gets a whole bunch of help from various companies to fight off these denial of service attacks. All the time tracking these people down and trying to figure out where they're coming from. Kind of interesting.
So after the site went down, after the Scientology site went down, they actually moved the web services, basically changed the DNS entry, over to a company called Prolex Technologies. And according to the Prolex, they protect people from denial of service attacks like this. So that idea of being really good about stopping denial of service attacks and actually having a business around it has become, in the last 3 years.
Yeah, I don't care who you are. You shouldn't have to deal with that kind of terror.
You shouldn't.
Because it really is. It's terror in a lot of ways.
It is. All right. Your next news story, Sean. It's probably the last news story because we're going to start taking calls.
Yeah, it's my favorite one, actually. So the HD DVD camp claims that the sky really is not falling down.
What?
So We've been talking about how HD DVD is going away.
And I think we have a clip of you saying the nails in the coffin from last week. But
they're saying, no, it's not over yet.
This sounds like denial to me.
I think their head's just above the water.
So you're saying that HD DVD, are you saying that you agree with their assumption of that they're not really
No, I'm not saying that at all. I just think it's funny that, you know, based on 1 week of sales, they're saying, you know, that doesn't mean it's over.
Right.
We're still here. Everything's very strong. We're still selling players and movies. And
well, GeekSpeak will take a
very
strong... But
sales data is not doing... Yeah. If you look at it, it doesn't look so good for them.
We at GeekSpeak will make a very strong recommendation to not buy HDVD as a long-term home media solution.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
No.
No matter how good the prices look.
Really?
Yeah.
What if you can get like 50 movies?
Because if all the studios start going Blu-ray, then what are you going to do?
Right.
You've got this really cheap player. It's not even that cheap. You're talking $150 versus maybe $200.
And if you know anyone that at one point had Laserdisc in their house for movies and they still have it or they have the movies, talk to them if you really want to buy HDVD because it's not going to be a good solution for you. You'll be in the same
situation. A lot of people are fanatical and they still think Laserdisc is better.
I know. They clean the systems and they replace the lasers and it's great.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, people like vinyl too.
I mean, so a friend of ours, you know, Ken... buys records, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a huge LP fan, and he just has a ton of records, which is great because he's got a lot of stuff that's just out of print.
Yeah.
You can't even listen to. I totally get that. But then he was telling me he wants to spend a large amount of money to buy a receiver from 1976 because, you know, it's an old tube receiver.
It matches his
equipment.
Sure.
I'm like, oh, my God. For that kind of money, you could buy an awesome state-of-the-art receiver.
Hey, you know, for free, you can listen to KUSP all week. We got great music running off of vinyl. So,
yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I just wish some of it were a little more metal and rock.
Yeah, we're listening to Rammstein on the way in here.
Rammstein, yeah.
Rammstein. You don't exactly hear that.
It's, you know, I listened for Brent. I was over the hill listening to 90.3 over in Silicon Valley. Trying to figure out which is our yeah, because some people are saying, you know, signal in some areas is not so great, and others is great, you know. So I was driving around, and it was classical. It's not the kind of classical that I like.
Oh.
It just, I felt really old.
How's our signal over there?
It's not bad. It's really not that bad. But when you get out to a 101, there's some frequency issues, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. But they're going to totally figure that out.
Now, do you have an HD radio in your car yet?
No.
Okay. Because our main signal,
I don't even have a digital connection for my MP3 player.
You're totally
which
out.
Is really sad.
It's because you can't hack the Prius very easily. That's the thing.
Well, it just costs money.
Yep.
The hacks are physical hacks, and then you actually got to install them.
Do they void warranties and such too?
The one I want does.
What do you want?
I
want to
have access to my GPS while the car is moving.
Oh,
I don't think I would void my warranty, but it's certainly not legal.
You mean you can't interface with it at the same time?
No. Once you most GPS units, when you drive, you can't. Interface where it gets locked. You get locked out.
Right. This is Geek Speak. We're taking your calls with questions and comments to technology now. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Hey, Sean. That one right there. In just a second, though. Geek Speak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS at Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, call 423-2447. Today, our guest on the show is Jesse Wilkins. Jesse Wilkins is a home tech specialist. He can come into your home, whether Windows or Mac, and help you with any kind of technology problems you're having with your computers. He can also do training with software. We get requests like this all the time because sometimes, it's very rare, we're not able to help you over the phone and through email. So because of that, sometimes it's just necessary and desirable to have a geek in the house. It costs you a little bit of money, but I'm sure it's well worth it. The phone numbers, if you'd like to ask Jesse any questions on air, 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877.
KUSP co-sponsors UC Santa Cruz's 24th annual Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Convocation featuring Julian Bond, chairman of the NAACP. Wow, that's kind of big. Bond will speak on the topic Civil Rights Then and Now, held at the Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium. The convocation will begin at 7 p.m. this Wednesday, January 30th. The event is free and open to the public and is part of the campus celebration of Black History Month.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. That was Sean Cleveland. I'm Lyle Troxell. Our guest today is Jesse Wilkins. We're taking your questions and comments of technology. You can ask us anything you'd like. I'll be giving out the phone numbers throughout the next half an hour. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. Well, we've got some calls already, of course. We're going to go ahead and...
It looks like we lost line one.
Okay, then we will go to line two. What were we going to say?
But the line one was about, is from Randy in Santa Cruz, about leaving Windows OS and going to Ubuntu or other open source OS.
Okay.
And I don't know. I think maybe we should talk to Jesse and ask him, what do you recommend? Are you doing that sort of thing?
You know, I've done a little bit of Linux and stuff like that. I say, if you're into it, go for it.
Yeah.
If you're willing to spend the time and energy and research and trial and error. But if you just want something to work out of the box for the most part, and that's quote-unquote certified to work with pretty much any software or hardware you work with, stick with a generic, you know, Windows or Mac OS.
Now, what about Ubuntu? Have you tried that?
You know, I've done a little bit of Red Hat, a little bit of... have I done Ubuntu?
Probably
you
not.
Try. You would be saying, Ubuntu.
Okay,
it's actually pretty
then.
Cool.
Because, like, Ubuntu, you install it. You can run off a live CD.
You can run off a live
house.
CD and just
okay,
boot.
I have done it like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally.
And get, yeah, it's a great thing.
But you know, obviously,
maybe
you
Randy
can do
will
the
call back, too.
A little more research on your end probably will go a long way.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I say, yeah, if you're into it, totally do it.
Yeah.
If not, hang back.
From San Miguel, Robin, welcome to Geek Speak. Could you speak up a little bit, Robin?
It's funny that you brought up your friend with all the vinyl, because that's my question. I would I understand that there are devices that convert vinyl to CDs, and I wonder if you have any experience with that and any recommendations on something to avoid or to look for specifically or wait for a future product that might be a little...
There's products now that I would recommend.
You know, Roxio is a company, R-O-X-I-O. They make a piece of software called Easy CD Creator. And that's really one of the strengths of their software is taking vinyl or audio from an outside source and importing it into your computer, removing the pops and clicks and hisses and things that you get from those types of sources. And then saving them off as a compressed format for digital devices or mm-hmm. burning them to CD.
That's just software, right?
Yeah, so then the physical solution, there are now USB record players, vinyl players, turntables.
That's going to cost you like $100, though.
Yeah, but that's worth it. If you've got a large collection, you want to get that stuff on your computer.
Right. If you've got a record player already, there's no reason why you can't take the the RGB audio connectors and get a... If you go to Santa Cruz Electronics, they'll help you get the right connectors. And you can hook it up to your computer and record off your audio in, you know, on your sound card.
So you go direct from the turntable
to your audio in on your sound card.
On the computer.
Mm-hmm. Jesse, what do you think?
You know, I say a lot of it depends on your technology level and your comfort and how much you're willing to spend. I mean, there are devices that you can put your record onto it and has a built-in CD burner. And you push a button and it records it. Now, I don't know how good those devices are, but they're probably a few $100s, and it is as simple as, you know, plugging the record on it, pushing the record button, and having a CD burned.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have as much manual control, but, you know, if that's your level of technical comfort, you know, you may just want to go that way.
If you want to spend the extra money.
So
if you have a large collection, you might just want to do that so you get it on the CD rather than just taking the time to do each one perfectly. So you could use either of these, either the audio in or the hardware, and then you could use this Roxio to clean up anything?
Yeah, that's what Sean's saying. It's actually like the Roxio Easy CD Creator actually has software that detects a quiet spot, which, you know, is normally a song separation, so it can auto-separate your files into different song files. This is all about getting it in your computer system. But the actual translation, like taking that audio and then trying to create a, you know, information about it, like what the title of the song is and where the musicians are and stuff, so your MP3 player, for example, could have all that information, that's a bit of legwork. There's no real great automated way of doing that.
Yeah, I'm MP3 illiterate.
Okay, well, then it doesn't matter to you. So really, you're just concerned about, you know, 10 years down the line, you might not have a record player and can't play these records anymore.
Yeah, well, I would like to be able to play them now.
Do you have a record player now?
I have tons of, I'm not sure that it's actually in working condition.
But you do have a computer.
Yes.
So there, if you go to thinkgeek.com,
right. spell that, please?
Like thinking, like think.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
THINK.
Okay.
G-
I didn't understand if it was think or dink.
Yeah, think. ThinkGeek.com.
Uh-huh.
And do a search for ION, I-O-N.
Uh-huh.
And you'll see the ION USB turntable.
Oh, okay.
So if you need a new turntable and you want to have it connect to your computer and it comes with the software you need to record those records, that would be an easy way to do it.
Okay, that's exactly what I wanted to know.
And, Sean, if you shoot me that link right now, I will put it up on the site.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for the call.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Robin. Now, if Jesse, if someone wanted to be able to do that but didn't actually want to spend the time to research that themselves, that kind of stuff you would actually help them with?
Yeah, I mean, I've got people calling up me all the time. Hey, what do you use for this? Or do you have any questions, ideas or comments about this device? And so I'll spend a few minutes doing some research, especially for my existing clients. You know,
yeah.
I'm happy to help them with any questions they have. I don't really get too many calls about recommended products from non-clients. And obviously that takes, you know, my cell phone bill gets quite heavily used, and I'm pretty busy, so it's hard for me to just go out and do research for people. So
yeah.
I say if they can just go to Google and type in what they're looking for to get a generic idea, I'm happy to help them integrate that into their existing infrastructure, but I'm not like the guru of everything hardware.
Okay, that's fine. That's valid.
So Rick has one of these ION turntables.
That's right.
And he says he's had good luck with it so far. So if you want to ask him, give us a call, and you can ask him what he thinks about it.
All right. The phone numbers I'll give out in just another minute. Let's go ahead and take a couple more calls.
We have a lot of calls here.
We do. They're piling up, so let's get to them. From Aptos, Rick, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. I have a couple questions. The first regards, in Mac OS X or OS 9, they had a very nice utility called file synchronization, where you could just point at select a directory, say your home directory, and point at another external disk, and it would automatically synchronize the two and keep a copy of your file on the external disk.
Right.
So it was a nice way to have a live backup. And if you're highly paranoid about having lots of data that you don't want to lose, that's the best way to do it, at
sure.
least for my use. Because I don't have time to even recover stuff from a retrospect backup, say. I just want to be able, if something goes down, I want to be able to just point to a different place and start
get it.
And keep
sure.
working.
Well, so, sorry, and then you're in OS 10, and now you don't know of a solution that's like that.
No, I couldn't find any file synchronization solution.
So there's two solutions here. One is the newest OS from Macintosh, OS 10.5, which is mm-hmm. called Leopard, has a thing called Time Machine, which does exactly what you're talking about.
Okay, good.
It doesn't do it to CD, however. You have to use a USB drive. It doesn't do CD or DVD. And I think that's a preferable way of doing it anyway, because you want the fast access speeds if you're going to recover a lot. But also, you just can't get you can't get the size on DVDs. It would be too difficult in that respect.
Right. Now, can you do it to an external FireWire drive?
Yes, it's FireWire or USB drive. Now,
okay.
Now, there's another product from Apple that's still functional called Backup. And Backup does similar to what you're talking about. It will scan your entire machine and make an image, and then it will compare them, and the next time it scans your machine, it will just save the changes. Now, recovery is a little different because you have to kind of know, you either have to use the backup thing to recover, which is a little bit like retrospect, or you have to mount those different images, if you will, and look through for your stuff. I am currently using both because before Leopard came around, I was using backup, which I liked,
mm-hmm.
But haven't done any recovering from that. So
I use retrospect, and I actually end up using it all the time if I save over at one of my templates.
You recover stuff.
Yeah.
You know what? You're going to like Time Machine then. It's very cool. You run an application, and basically your computer now has multiple screens being displayed kind of behind each other, fading off into the distance. And you can step through your system and look at it, what it looked like a week ago or a month ago or whatever. So you can really take a look at what files have been there and what files haven't been there.
Now, will this work on external drives? Because I have huge archives, almost a terabyte of audio files, interviews and such, I want to have get two terabyte drives and make
yeah.
sure they're always in sync.
Yeah, you could do that you could do that to some degree. It's a little more difficult with Time Machine. I think you're going to want to use an rsyncing type of solution, but I'm not really familiar with what a perfect out-of-the-box product like that would work. Jesse, are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I often use one called ProSoft Data Backup. And they're in their third iteration of that right now. That's ProSoft Engineering.
I'll have it up on the site in just a second.
I like their stuff. They've got a few different types of backups, you know, synchronization, incremental, whatever's been changed since the last time you've edited the file. I would say if you're really worried about if you delete a file on your computer and you want to be able to restore it from an external drive, you probably don't want to use synchronization because it can, depending on how it's set up, just also delete that file from the external drive.
Right. No, what I want is I have two. What I want to have is two terabyte external drives and have them always be the same.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
So that wouldn't work for that. There's a product I use called. Now I've got to look down my dock. Let's see. Super Duper. Have you ever heard of Super Duper?
Yeah, definitely.
So Super Duper is kind of the same type of product, but it basically you're imaging a hard drive and it will keep it up to sync. So you could use Super Duper, for example, and have 2 terabyte drives connected to your machine and target one as the primary and the second one, you know, sync it. You can actually sync it both ways. So that might be a product you're looking for, that you might want to look for. I think it costs under $50, I believe. It's called Super Duper. And again, I'll put that up on geekspeak.org in just a second. I think we're going to go into the next call, unless there was anything else.
Actually, I wanted to ask you guys if you would talk about, do you have any feeling about whether or not Apple's going to put a Blu-ray drive in the next generation of their 17-inch laptop? And also, do you just recall when they first released the 17-inch laptop?
First released the 17-inch laptop, I'm going to say 2 or 3 years. You think 2002? No, I don't think it was that early.
Yeah, maybe a 3 or something like that. You know, if you could download a program called Mac Tracker. Mm-hmm. I think it's Mac. Go to Version Tracker and do a look. What's it called? It's called Mac Tracker, yeah. You can find every information on every single Mac there ever has been.
Oh, good.
We have thrown out URLs and stuff like mad cakes here. and I'm putting them all up on geekspeak.org if anyone's interested in having a list of them instead of trying to frantically write things down.
Yes.
And the other question was, are they going to be releasing Blu-ray drives inside the Mac laptops?
Yeah.
It makes sense to me the next time they're going to do it. Now, next time they update the hardware of the machines, they'll allow super drives. Now, I mean, Blu-ray drives. The issue that might put a hamper in that is that... the boss there, Steve Jobs, is very keen on the idea of you don't need to buy media anymore, you need to buy service. And so he is pushing his iTunes service that allows you to buy movies through them and download them to your computer. And so he might have this idea that if he restricts the Blu-ray, that people will buy
through them. Which is really dumb, because
so
blank Blu-ray media is like $15 to $20 a piece.
Well,
so I don't understand why you would spend all of this time downloading a 4-gigabyte movie. No, I'm sorry, that's regular DVD. Yeah. You're downloading a 20 to 30 gigabyte movie that's HD, uncompressed, and then burning it to a $15, $20 blank disk. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah,
right
why not
now.
Just buy
it? Well, buy the movie.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about movies. I just want it because it would be a way. Those Blu-rays hold, 80 gigabytes or something?
No, 50 gigs on dual-layer disks.
50 gigs. I mean, that's enough for me to put a whole, large audio project.
Yeah.
Well,
I think for archival purposes.
Yeah, you can do that now. Just go buy an external Blu-ray USB drive.
Yeah, that way it works for any computer you have.
Yeah.
That's what I would recommend.
Yeah, you don't have
to
wait for it to
be
built in. Yeah,
that's true. Rick, thank you for the call.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, bye.
Bye.
From Santa Cruz, Helen, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi. I have two short questions. The first one is that I'm looking to buy an iMac PowerBook. And I want something that's moderately priced because I have right now a desk, an iMac that's a desk, I guess it's called, what is it, a desk copy, that I can't move it around. I'm not very knowledgeable about this, but it works for me. And I want to buy an iMac that's a PowerBook, but I want something that is moderately priced, maybe starting at $1,200. What do I need to look for?
It's called the MacBook.
Not the MacBook Pro, but the MacBook.
And they start at about $1,000. They go up to about $1,500 for the MacBook version. And there's like 3 different versions of it. And they get slightly faster and bigger hard drives.
And of those, is there something specific that I should look for, like a better memory hard drive?
It really depends on what you do. It doesn't sound like you have that high of requirements. So
if you're going for price, just buy the lowest one that Apple produces, and that will service your needs.
DD says $1,099.
Yep.
Yeah.
And can I have now not the leopard, but the tiger version that I bought for this other one. Can I put that tiger version into this new one?
No, you'll get the new one. We'll come with leopard.
It does come with leopard.
Yeah, but it will migrate your data over for you. It's a pretty simple step. You connect the two computers together with a cable. You might have to buy that cable called a FireWire cable. And if you really don't want to deal with like the details of that, buy the new laptop as soon as it arrives. Call Jesse and ask him to come to your house, and he'll just charge you a little bit more money to help you hook up and get them synced. But it's not that complicated.
Okay, so I could actually use the Leopard also for the other one.
Moving, installing Leopard on the one that you already have would be breaking the license agreement that you would have with a new machine. Huh. Additionally, it might not have the same, it wouldn't be a good solution for you. You'd want to probably just keep the operating system you have on the current one, mm-hmm. and on the new machine.
It comes with Leopard. Okay, my second question is about Jesse. How does one get hold of him?
Oh, well, on our website right now is Jesse's email address. It's Wilkins Consulting.
So he's not giving out a phone number.
You're going to give your phone number out? You know what? I think your phone number is on your website.
You know, go to my website.
Well,
it's wilkinsconsulting.us.
What is it?
You know what? Just go to geekspeak.org. I'm going to put up his phone number mm-hmm. and everything, and it'll be easy for you to talk to him.
Okay, thanks.
I hope you're ready for this.
Yeah, go for it.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Bye-bye.
We get a lot of questions for help.
Fun stuff.
And Jesse, I don't want to look it up. What's your phone number?
831.
Okay.
588-4319.
588 what?
4319.
All right, there you go. If you heard that, if not, you go up to geekspeak.org and the phone number will be up there.
Limited minutes on my cell phone on the weekend.
So if you hang up on him, if he hangs up on you, don't feel insulted. Of course, you can send him emails.
But we were talking
about
tech this morning, and Jesse seems to have a really good grasp of what needs to be done with a lot of people's computers, both PC and Mac. So I think it's really cool.
It's interesting. A lot of it's intuitive now. I just sort of get a sense from what's going on, and it works most of the time. It's really interesting.
That's great.
From Watsonville, let's see how you do with Judith from from Watsonville. Hey, Judith. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
What's your question today?
I recently got a 2 gigabyte flash drive, the SanDisk flash drive. It was on sale. And when I got it home, I realized it had some programs installed on it. U3 is what they call it.
Sure.
And I have a Macintosh, so it's completely worthless to me.
Right.
And
PC software. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, you're correct. It's PC software.
It's PC software. So I wanted to I called up to ask if it's if it will affect the disk if I uninstall it, and they said no, you can uninstall it, but they said I had to use a Windows machine to do it, and I thought that seems kind of
ridiculous.
I mean, I think ridiculous, and I thought, well, could I just put it in the trash? Or then I thought, well, maybe I guess I could probably. I think I answered my own question as I was doing it. I could probably use disk utility to erase the whole thing and put whatever I want.
Absolutely,
the best way to do it?
Yeah, I would do that.
Well, unless it's in its own.
Has its own folder, and I think you can just
throw it away.
If not, you can reformat it as like an MS-DOS disk in Disk Utility.
So that's the thing, is you do want to make this, you want to keep it what's called FAT32, and
you sure? Unless it's a hidden partition.
No, that's the thing, is I have a flash disk, by the way. I'm not sure if it's SanDisk, but I've got a little USB memory stick that has a second partition with Windows software on it, and I cannot remove it. It's not accessible. I can't erase it. It's just on it. And every time I stick it in a Windows machine, it runs this little program. It's pretty annoying.
So on a Windows machine, you go to Settings and U3 Launchpad Settings and do Uninstall.
Right.
So on any PC, if you plugged it in, you could quickly uninstall it.
Yeah. So you just go to a friend's house and do it.
So it is better. If
you can connect it to your computer right now and you can put it in the trash can and erase the trash, do that, and the problem is solved. It's as simple as that. It's only a rare case that they're actually going to have a second partition that's restricted. So really just throw it away.
Throw it away.
In the trash can. Go up to erase trash, and if it doesn't come back, then you're set. And if it does come back, buy a bottle of wine and go over to a Windows user's house.
Okay.
Give him a gift. Okay? Thank you so much for the call.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye, Jim. Bye.
It's really funny. We go to, Thanksgiving sometimes up by Napa to... relative's house, and then they have a bunch of their friends come, and one of the guys is an elderly guy. He likes to invest and play with the stock market, and he said to me once, what do you think of SanDisk? I'm like, oh, it's a great company, it's in fact I have some memory. And he, I don't maybe he heard me wrong, that maybe I was telling him it's a great company to invest in, but I was just telling him they make great memory, you know, and it's the fastest memory. And a lot of, maybe that's why he took the advice. Uh-huh. So he dumped a lot of money into them. And he made a killing, and he came back and said, you know, that was a great you know, investment tip you gave me. I made a lot of great money. Wow, that's great.
Man, I wish I had that ability.
I wish you would have told me I might have. Anyway. Well, every time I think of SanDisk, I think of that.
He thinks you made a good recommendation.
I think of Bill making a lot of money off of my funky recommendation.
All right. Well, another Bill from Capitola. Welcome to GeekSpeak. Hello, Bill. Welcome to GeekSpeak. Hi.
Hello. My question involves a Mac, a G5 that's running Tiger 10.4.6. And I recently, all of a sudden, it has stopped being able to open certain websites. And I called the store, and they said, do something about permissions. So I did their routine about permissions, and I also...
You followed their instructions?
Pardon me?
You followed their instructions?
Yes.
And it still wouldn't work?
Well, it actually got the Apple site to start working, and some of the other sites that weren't working now come up. But there's still a few sites that they just refuse to start. And one of them is Excite, and the other is eBay. And they just kind of sit there.
Have you been doing Mac updates?
Yeah.
Is 10.4.6...
4.11.
4.11. So you could do updates to 10.4.11. I think that's going to come with Safari 3.
It will.
And that might solve your problem.
Okay.
So what you want to do is go up to your Apple, make sure you're connected to a fast connection, or do it right before you go to sleep because it's going to take a long time. And just go to the Apple and go to Software Updates and run that. Now, if nothing comes up, you're going to have to do it manually, which would be bad. Is there a way to reset the software updates?
It should work.
It should work, yeah. And then you're going to get a list of all this stuff to download. Just let it check everything for you and say, go for it. And after that, you're going to have a new browser. Now, it sounds like it's the Safari thing, and I would have suggested erasing the plist files as well. But since you did that and it still has trouble, I would be concerned about hardware problems, and specifically your hard drive. So it's possible. But if you're not seeing any other side effects, it's unlikely that it's hardware.
How do you get online?
Through cable modem.
Do you plug directly into the modem, or do you have a router in between that?
There's a router in between.
What brand is it?
G4.
Do you know what it looks like?
I'll look at it.
What color it is?
It's...
See, Jesse, this is the kind of stuff that it's clearly you're very experienced in this. I'm like, where are you going with
Linksys?
This?
Linksys.
It's a Linksys.
I would look for a firmware update for that on their website. So go to Linksys.com. At the top of the page, there's a downloads button. Look for your product and upgrade the firmware.
Okay.
I've seen a lot of weird issues with Macs and DNS issues. And for some reason, upgrading their firmware often fixes that. It's quite weird.
I would not have recommended that, so it's great to have you here, Jesse. Thank you. You can see that Jesse definitely has the experience and expertise that he touts. Is it hard to upgrade the firmware on a Linksys router?
No. You know, if you know how to log into the router itself, and you can get the sort of the how-to on their website, there's a firmware to download. Then there's also usually like a little readme file.
And when he's talking about logging into it, it means going to the web interface to manage it. Sometimes your cable company, everything, handles it all for you, and it's a little abstract, but you should actually have the information because you own that piece of hardware. Do you know how to do that?
The hardware for the Linksys?
Yeah.
The Linksys. Specifically, logging in to manage it through a web interface. Have you ever done that, Bill?
I don't think so. Not since I set it up, anyway.
Yeah, so what you need to do is go find that manual again, and you'll see that there'll be an address, and then you have to remember your password. Maybe you have none set, which is kind of common, and then you should be able to get into it pretty easily. And then there's going to be, on their site, they're going to download a little file to your computer, and on the web interface, there's actually going to be a page for updating firmware, and there'll be like a little upload button, and you just put that file into that upload button, and then you're set.
Okay.
Good luck.
Great. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Make sure to write your settings down before you do anything. Go ahead and go through the thing and really jot them down. You can even print the pages out, because it's possible that the firmware upgrade will lose all those, and you'll have to reset it. Okay?
All right.
All right. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Okay, I got to ask, because for a while when I was between jobs after a dot-com bust and I was out of work, I did kind of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I went around to schools, I went around and did some work. I didn't turn into a full-blown business, but actually kind of took over some of John Tracy's clients, who's one of the other geeks that comes on the show sometimes and a friend of yours.
Yep.
And one thing that I got every time is I'd come in someone's house, they'd want help with something, I'd be like, okay, where are your passwords? Like, well, I don't know really what this password is, and we start having this dialogue and guessing, and you're sitting here guessing. And the first thing I would do is make sure to put, like, you know, have them write it down. I know that's kind of ridiculous, but it's bad advice. But you know, you write it down, you put it in your office drawer, and who else is going to have access to
Certainly.
It?
Certainly.
So what do you do with that kind of situation?
The question there is, are they worried about like people hacking into their computer and getting their password, or are they worried about people walking up to their computer and looking for their password? So if it's their house, you know, they probably don't care unless they have, you know, significant family members or kids.
Yeah,
they don't want to
yeah.
log into their computer. But if you're not in like an office, you usually don't care.
Right.
So I say write it down. I usually write down all the wireless info. If I set up their wireless router, like on Bill's question, I would write down his wireless network name, his encryption code, any login passwords. So if he calls me in the
say,
future...
And then you say, keep this, do not...
Exactly. Yeah. Or if someone else comes over, or if he has a family member, or if he decides to get into it, he has all the information right there.
Okay. Now, the one other recommendation I'd have is if you're going to write down your passwords and stuff, and you're going to have it someplace, and you don't want someone else that might have access to the computer to have access to those passwords, you can very easily do a really simple... you know, mental encryption on mm-hmm. passwords.
Definitely.
Things like you write, well, a simple one would be write half of it someplace and half it somewhere else, or, you know, insert some characters in the middle of it, but actually don't write them down, just leave blank spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll know from looking at it what the password is, but no one else would.
Yep, I do that one actually. I write like part of the password down and leave the other parts blank, so it sort of jives my memory of what, oh yeah, I remember it was this one because I have this blank here and that letter there. But, you know, whatever works for yourself.
All right. We're going to go ahead. I guess we're going to go to, well, let's try Mike. Mike?
Hey, thanks for the show.
Do oh, is this Maureen?
Do a whole show on audio sometime.
It's, okay.
There's so much stuff out there. Can I recommend a program since there isn't much time? MP3 Gain. It's a simple program. No bloatware. I love those kind of programs. And it normalizes MP3 files, the volume.
Is it a Macintosh or a Windows?
No, Windows.
Windows tool, and it's called MP3 Gain?
Yes.
What is it
for? It's a perfect little program. That's all it does is normalize the volume on MP3 files. So if you have a whole bunch of MP3 files, it normalizes the volume. And if you're doing internet broadcasting or something, that's kind of important not to have the volume different.
And what's your name?
Maureen.
Maureen, thank you so much for the call.
All right.
All right, bye-bye.
Free software.
Yay.
That's a good tie-in to our guest.
That's true. Free software. So next week, we've got a big guest on GeekSpeak. And
Richard Stallman.
Richard Stallman's going to be on the show. Richard Stallman is the father of free software. He is the person that started founding GNU, which is the other half of Linux we never talk about. Linux, when we talk about Linux operating system, it really should be GNU Linux. And GNU actually stands for GNU is not Linux, so it's a recursive acronym. But in any case, Richard Stallman's going to be in the air room next week on GeekSpeak here talking about open source and not free software specifically, the idea that you don't necessarily have to have a model in which software costs money and about sharing software.
So also the Cabrillo GNU Linux group is having Richard Stallman speak at Cabrillo on February 4th at 6:30 p.m. So if you want to go see him speak...
That'll be after our show.
Or you can call Helios Solutions West in Felton at 335-7303. And we'll put their link up on geekspeak.org.
It'll be about for next week's show. We'll have a whole bunch of information about that as well.
And we're going to have him here.
So yeah, in the air room. It's
if you guys want to call and talk about free software, I'd love to get his recommendations about various.
Oh, definitely.
That's going to be really cool.
And, of course, he's going to be recommending most likely not to run... to run free operating systems as well as free software. But we'll get all into that next week on GeekSpeak. You are listening to GeekSpeak, and it is the end of the show. Today we had Jesse Wilkins on. He's a consultant helping the Central Coast of California with their computer needs in your home. You can learn more about Jesse Wilkins at geekspeak.org, where his phone number and email address are there, and you can get him to help you out, I'm sure. GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.